Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spiders. To kick this one off, we are going to do a overall husbandry genus review. Unfortunately, I only have three of the species from this genus, but it's going to be Nandu. Not to be confused with Nandru. I don't know if anybody caught my latest YouTube video, but we rehouse my Nandu trapepii, apparently is how it's pronounced. The other thing was I tried to pronounce the species name, I always pronounce Trapepii, and then somebody came on one of my videos and went, no, I think the double I is pronounced as I, so I kept saying Trapepii or Trepi, whatever you prefer, and a couple people came on and were nice enough to correct me and go, no, it's actually Trapepii, which sounds really weird, but we'll go with it. But anyway, I'm going back to do the editing on the video, and every time I went to say Nandu or Nandu, I said Nandru, which it started to become one of those things that every time you hear it, you cringe, and it's like, please God, Tom, say it right one of these times. And I think I finally did eventually say it correctly, so I had to put a note in the video. Usually I don't mess it up that badly. I don't know what happened. I know how to pronounce it, but it just kept coming out as Nandru. So anyway, we did the video on that. I gave some husbandry notes because anybody that's followed the podcast or my channel for a while knows that I picked up a Nandu trapepii quite a while ago. It was a sex female from Tom Patterson, who, by the way, we are two different people. There's a running joke now that Tom apparently gets a lot of people talking to him about the videos. I get people that are now emailing me, asking me what I have in stock. We're two entirely different people. I actually addressed this in a video not a long ago, where I tried to explain where, you know, with two different people, Tom knows an incredible amount about tarantulas, probably more than I will never, no, probably, no, more than I will ever know. He's been breeding them for years. I'm the guy that does the videos on the husbandry. But anyway, picked up a female from him several years ago. I believe it was 2016, February of 2016. And it was one of the few times that I picked up, especially after I got heavy into the hobby. Once I got heavy into the hobby, I stopped picking up sexed females. I think when you first get into the hobby, and this is a topic we may cover on the end of this one if it doesn't go over long. If not, it'll be on next week. But when you first get into the hobby, I think you don't feel like you're scared of working with slings and you don't feel like waiting. I think that was a big thing for me, is I wanted to start a tarantula collection and I didn't want to have a bunch of little, you know, ammo boxes on my shelf full of dirt that I couldn't see anything in. But after I got heavy into the hobby, it's all I wanted, slings. Like, I do not like buying sexed adults anymore. I don't buy anything sexed. I buy all slings. I like it that way. I've had people offer me ones. I'm like, hey, do you have any slings? I'd rather grow them up. So anyway, I picked this one up because I looked up pictures of it and I'm like, why haven't I seen this thing before? I'd never seen a picture of it. And I went on Google, did an image search, looked at the pictures. I'm like, this thing even looks half as cool as it does in these photos. This is going to be an amazing spider. So I jumped that and I picked it up. It was a good price. But as I've showed it off over the years, people have asked me to do husbandry notes on it. And my thing is, I won't do husbandry notes. I try to avoid doing husbandry notes on specimens that I didn't raise up. Meaning, I think anybody can go out and pick up an adult spider and then go, yeah, this is how I would keep it. But that's not firsthand information. You don't know if you could have raised that thing up. Who knows? You could have done something that could have killed it. My theory is, if people are going to come to me for information, I want to be able to say, I picked it up at a small size, I grew it up, therefore, apparently what I did was successful, so this is something that might benefit you. Might not necessarily be the only way to raise them up, but at least I can say it worked for me. It was the correct way. So when people would ask me for information on them, I would kind of, you know, I'd basically say flat out, I'm not good. This is how I probably would keep slings, but I have not kept slings. I always make that differentiation. And I've had many people ask me to do a husbandry video on them. Like, I'm not going to make a husbandry video on a spider that I picked up that was pretty much an adult, but let me see. Let me try to get some slings. So long story short, this summer I picked up some slings from Fear Not, and little teeny tiny guys, so I could raise them up. I wanted to raise them up from I love the species so much, like, I really want to raise this from slings. It's just, you feel cheated when you get them as an adult, even though I absolutely adore my girl. But I decided that I would get some slings, raise them up, and be able to write about them, do some videos about them, and maybe podcast about them. So here we are. So a good starting point would probably be to start with the Nandu trapepii. And again, if you want to catch the video version of it, you'll see some pictures of my girl, which I think that's the biggest selling point with some of these. Again, I like the trade-off with between the doing the videos and doing the podcast. The podcast, I get to go much more in depth. I get to be a little more relaxed. I don't have to try to fit what I'm going to say into, you know, a 15-minute video. But you don't get to see the images. And I think with the trapepii in particular, any of the species on this list, seeing them is kind of adds that extra push to go out and grab them. And again, that seems to be all I'm about lately is getting people to pick up spiders. I feel terribly because I get emails all the time and comments all the time. Yeah, I just saw this video, so I picked this one up. I'm like, there's got to be a lot of husbands and spouses out there that can't stand me because every time their significant other listens to one of my podcasts or watches one of their videos, they end up spending more money on spiders. So my apologies to anybody out here who is a spouse or girlfriend or significant other or boyfriend, whatever it may be, of somebody that I'm influencing. I really do feel badly about it. So anyway, on to the Nandru Trapepii. I'm going to keep saying it so I can say it correctly, not Nandru. The slings I got in the summer, and they were a little teeny tiny. For some reason, I mean, I had read that this species has an incredible amount of slings when it has babies. And I figured, though, however, they'd be a little bit on the larger side. No, they're very small. They were probably a half inch, maybe under a half inch or so. One of those ones that you almost look at and go, ooh, my, you're going to be tiny. And I had 5-ounce deli cups ready for them when they arrived. And we opened them up and unpacked them. And I'm like, I'm not going to be able to see them in the deli cups. It's going to freak me out. So I broke out some little dram vials. They were the ones that were about a diameter about an inch across and about 2 inches deep or so. They're kind of smaller ones. Filled them with a little substrate, moist substrate, obviously. And this goes without saying. I feel like I'm always repeating myself when I do these sling guides. I always feel like a poser because if you go and look at the information I give, a lot of it's very similar from species to species, especially when you're dealing with slings. With slings, you always, for the most part, I can think of a handful of species that I would probably keep a little drier. I'm looking at you, P. Murinus. But the majority of sling species you keep, you're going to want to keep with moist substrate and give them enough room to dig. One of the common issues I see if people ask me to look at their sling enclosures is they set up these cool little enclosures with little like fake leaves and, you know, maybe a little leg of water dish or whatever, but they only give them a little teeny bit of substrate. And the problem with that is it dries out super quickly. And remember with slings, they need that moisture. They need to be able to burrow to find the moisture level they need. So if you're able to pack in an inch of substrate and keep those bottom levels moist, it's going to be a lot easier for you and a lot safer for the sling. So I gave them the dram vials. They dug little burrows. They were mostly out of sight. I didn't see them all that much. And I was at that time, it was pre-killing the Red Runner roaches, the B. lateralis roaches. And a couple times, I believe I found some mealworms I still had in the fridge that were getting ready to move. So I want to get rid of. So we cut up some mealworms, gave mealworm pieces. You'd catch them every once in a while coming out and eating, but for the most part, they stayed hidden. Now, what has impressed me about these guys is how quickly they have grown. And when I put them in these vials, I'm like, all right, they're going to be there for quite a while. Well, when I went to do that rehousing video the other day, I was eyeing one of the containers and I saw the size of the sling in it. And I'm like, this thing needs a new home. Well, the container I grabbed, because I have 5 of them, had a different sling in it and was surprised to find that that one had already hit about an inch and a half. I keep saying in the video, an inch and a quarter. We measured it afterwards, a full inch and a half. So this thing had put on some serious size. So they do, at least mine do eat very well. They grow quickly. I quickly got them away from eating pre-killed and I was able to drop in pinhead B. lateralis roach babies that they would hunt down with no problem whatsoever. I'm looking at mine now and I rehoused one of them that was an inch and a half. 2 more have molted since then and there's 2 others that look like they're ready to molt soon. So they're all around that inch and a half mark, which is pretty impressive considering how small they were when I picked them up. I believe it was right around July or so in the summer, maybe even August. Now, as for the feeding schedule, as I usually do with my small slings, I try to feed them twice a week or so. But with these guys, I've noticed I was dropping in some bigger, especially when I was using the B-lats. A couple of the ones I dropped in, the pre-killed ones, were quite large. So they would eat like twice and then immediately go into pre-molt. Temperatures, and this goes for the other species we're going to discuss on this list, with the exception of, it's going to go for one of the species on the list. The other one was kept a little cooler. But the temperatures in the summer were the high 70s to up to 80 for most of the summer. When we moved over here, I keep the tarantula room a little cooler than I did over at the old house, and it's usually right around 72 to 74 degrees in here. But the nice thing is they've continued to eat well and grow quickly, so I didn't see a huge differentiation between when they were kept warmer and now that they're kept cooler, because that's one of the things you always need to keep in mind when raising anything. Generally speaking, the higher the temperatures, the faster the animals, the tarantula's metabolism. So I've kept mine in the 70s and gotten a certain growth rate. And I've talked to people that theirs are kept in the 80s. They're getting a much quicker growth rate. That's always something to keep in mind. But I would say even with them being kept in 70s, which is right around room temperature, they're still eating and growing great. Now, when it came time to rehouse them, I goofed. I was Again, I thought they were a little smaller than they were. I was thinking they were around an inch. They scrunch all up to the point where they look like little tiny slings, but then I realized they were scrunched up, and once they spread the legs out, they were much larger. But I rehoused the one in the video into a 5-ounce deli cup. I won't go to say it's too small. It's just the right size for it right now. It's going to molt once and be too big for it. So the other guys are going to get 16-ounce deli cups. That would be something around 16-ounce size would be a good place to move to after they get out of that dram stage, dram vial stage. You could probably do something even bigger. I've got sling cages I use. They're made by M Design that have the hinged covers. They're like acrylic hinge covers. I could probably put those into one of them. Those are about 6 inches by 5 inches across by about 3.5 inches deep or so, around that size. To start, it would seem a little large for them. I mean, it would give them plenty of room, let's put it that way, but I think they grow into it rather quickly. Again, this is a work in progress, and meaning that I have not grown them to full adulthood yet, so I don't know. They could slow down when they hit that juvenile stage. There could be one of those huge jumps like Formictopus gets. We're not there yet. Right now, my guys are about an inch and a half, molt or two. I'd probably consider them juveniles, or almost juveniles now because they're starting to show some of the colors. But this will be something that I'll report more on later. And then at some point when I've got, you know, young adults, then we'll do the full husbandry video where I can go, all right, I've raised them from slings to adults. But this is just kind of a little letting people know what's going on so far with them. So that's what the other ones will be going into, something around 16 ounces, maybe a little bit more or so. That'll give them, again, we're going to give them plenty of substrate to dig in because they do seem to appreciate being able to burrow a bit. We're going to give them moist substrate. I will let it dry out a little bit in one part, but make sure those lower levels, again, stay moist. I will give them cork bark high, and they'll have a water dish and there'll be some sphagnum moss in there. All the normal fixings for setting up a tarantula enclosure. So we will monitor how those go. Again, I just wanted to give people an update on what's going on so far because we have had them for a little while, and I have been impressed by the growth rate. And I know when people see them for sale and see, oh, it's like a half inch sling, they think, my God, it's going to take forever for me to have a big, beautiful adult. It's not going to take you forever. At the rate these guys are going, I got a funny feeling they're going to be pushing 3 or 4 inches within the year mark, which will be fantastic. So I will update people on that when the time comes. As for my female, she was originally in one of those big Sterilite boxes. It's about 14 to 16 inches long, about 11 inches wide, and about 5.5-6 inches deep or so. I use them. They're kind of my standard go-to generic enclosure for larger terrestrial species. It easily holds about 3 inches of substrate, which is decent for ones that aren't doing any burrowing anymore. It may just use their hides. She had the cork bark hide. She had the sphagnum moss. She had definitely a water dish that I keep full at all times. I do allow things to dry out a little bit for her in between, and then I moisten it down again, moisten down the lower levels, and repeat. So I don't keep it 100% moist all the time, but the majority of time there is some moisture in there, and she's always got the water dish. Now, I just moved her into one of the primal cage enclosures, the ones that are 16 by 12 by 10, I believe. Good size enclosures, the magnetic lid ones. And I set it up with BioDude substrate. She's got the cork bark hide, which I kind of worked into the landscape to kind of make it pretty. So she's got the little cave underneath. She's got leaf litter and, of course, once again, the water dish. So all the normal fixings, nothing. If you've seen any of my setups, you'll recognize immediately what this one looks like. But I did want to get her into one of those acrylic enclosures because she is absolutely stunning. One of my favorites, one of the family's favorites, one of my favorites personally, and one of the ones anytime I post videos of her up, people are like, oh my God, I love that spider. And a lot of people are picking them up as a result, which is great. But again, apologies to your significant others. So she's been rehoused. She's doing awesome. She spent a little time on the side of the enclosure, about a week on the side of the enclosure. But the other day I came down, I believe it was Thursday, I came down and she was finally on the ground, resting comfortably for a while. That's normal behavior. I get a lot of people go, oh, I rehoused my spider 2 days ago and it's on the side of the enclosure. A lot of them will do that. They have this thing where they don't want to go down and touch the ground. Eventually they should come down unless there's a situation where you haven't packed down the substrate. I've seen it where people put the cocoa fiber in and they don't pack it way down and the spider gets on it and they don't like it because they sink too much. So they will avoid it. That's something that you can, you know, could be an issue that could cause your spider to climb. Another popular one is if you have a spider that likes, prefers dry substrate and the substrate's really wet, they will sometimes cling to the side and not step on it. So two things to think about. Otherwise, it's usually very, very normal. The majority of ones that I rehouse spend some time up in a corner. They usually come down. So that about covers what I have for N. trepepii, which again, they seem to be picking up. The one thing I really like, and I mentioned this in the video, is that when I first got these guys, I didn't hear anything about them. And I was like, why aren't more people keeping them? I should take a minute, actually. This is a good spot to segue into temperament. This could be part of it. Mine is a little crazy. And I've spoken, the majority of people that I've spoken to describe theirs as a cross between skittish and nuts. And by nuts, I don't mean defensive. I mean, they're kind of weird. Like mine, you will open the container and she will often run around, like not so much like she's scared, but like she's looking for an opening. And I've had her come right up to the top of the opening and kind of perch there, like looking at me like, yeah, what's up? And she's done this quite a few times. And when I posted the video recently, a lot of other folks came on and reported similar kind of skittish, kind of weird, inquisitive behavior, kind of just, they're kooky, they're fun. And a couple people came on, mentioned that theirs are hair kickers. Mine has kicked hairs twice now. One was when I housed her when I first got her. One was during this recent rehousing. So I've been very fortunate. She has not been a hair kicker for me. Worst case scenario, she'll kind of bolt around the enclosure a bit and then kind of flatten herself out and wait. But mine has not been a hair kicker. A couple people also said that theirs were a bit defensive, would throw up some threat postures. So that is probably something that deters some people from keeping them because they hear about this. And I could see somebody being new to the hobby, you know, a beginner that isn't used to that type of behavior, being a bit freaked out by a spider that can be potentially supposedly 7.5 inches or so, you know, running around or throwing up a threat posture or kicking a bunch of hairs. And while we're on hairs, the Nandu species are known for having really very nasty hairs. Somebody told me that the Nandu, there I go, caught myself. The Nandu or Nandu chromatis don't have as bad hairs as the other ones, but I've heard from other people that they have terrible hairs. I want to say they don't have the type 3 that are really bad. It was something like that. I don't know. I've heard from many people that their N chromatis are quite nasty, that the Trapepi hairs can be quite nasty. So just be careful with them because they do have a reputation for having particularly nasty hairs. So as for being a beginner species, for most people, true beginners, folks that have never kept spiders before that may come in with arachnophobia, that may be younger, you'd probably want to shy away from it. Folks that are, you know, feeling pretty comfortable, they're getting into the hobby pretty quickly, they're feeling comfortable around their spiders, they have their rehousings down, probably wouldn't be such a big deal. The only time you're going to have real trouble with them is during the rehousings, but that's what you can expect with just about any spider. So awesome spiders, definitely encourage people to check them out. Now, we've already talked a little bit about Nandu chromatis, so we might as well segue right into Nandu. I've told this story before that many years ago, because again, this is when I was buying sex ones, I found somebody on Arachnoboards that was selling a female, 6-inch female. And when I first saw pictures of this spider, I thought it was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. Their colors between the red seta on the abdomen that just really stand out, the kind of gray bone colored carapace, those stripes. I just think they are gorgeous and very unique spiders. And this individual was selling out of a lot of spiders in her collection, I believe her whole collection. So I bought like 6 of them. And to make a long story short, because I've told this story before and it's depressing, it was right around Christmas time. We had them shipped and it ended up, 2 things happened that were terrible. One, she shipped them without any type of insulation or heat pack. And her starting temperatures where she was 50 degrees. Our temperatures dropped down into, I believe, the single digits. So it probably shouldn't have been shipped to begin with, but it came to us late. It came a day late, and it came where the temperature had nosedived, and nobody had expected. It was kind of like one of these, oh, the temperature's going to be even colder today. Long story short, we unpacked a lot of dead animals, and one of them was this beautiful N chromatis. It was a really depressing moment for us in the hobby, and the whole family's around the table because dad's getting this big box of spiders, and this is when it was still a novelty, and they're all dead. So fast forward quite a bit to around fall 2015, I saw that the dealer that's no longer around had larger slings for sale. They're like 1 to 1.25 inches. So they're well-established slings. And I'm like, I got to jump on this. So I threw one into my order, was hoping I'd get a female. Not only did I get a female, I got one of the coolest spiders I have ever got in terms of behavior, because this crazy little booger, first thing I kept her in was a 32-ounce deli cup. And then we moved her when she put on some size. I moved her into what was one of those mainstay containers, the two-quart, I think they're around two-quart half-gallon ones, the crystal clear ones. I had her in one of those for quite some time. She did a lot of burrowing. I gave her deep, moist substrate, and she used it. She burrowed all the way down the bottom, had this big chamber. It was one of the more extensive burrows I've ever seen from a terrestrial tarantula. Then after she put on some size and grew out of that, I moved her into a typical Sterilite shoebox, one of the smaller shoeboxes ones, the ones that you keep like women's flats in. And the ones are, I think, about 6 inches by 12 inches by about maybe 5 inches deep or so, the standard size shoeboxes. And then she started exhibiting this really bizarre behavior. This is the one that basically I'd fed her, and then I fed her again. She didn't seem to be getting fat. I fed her a third time, fed her a fourth time. She wasn't putting on, it was weird. She wasn't putting on any weight. I was really kind of worried about her. And then I opened up her enclosure one day and I noticed there were a bunch of gnats or flies in it. And I'm like, this isn't good at all. So I found the spider. She was fine. And because we first thought is, oh God, did she die or something in her burrow? So I'm looking around and the flies seem to be congregating around one corner. So I take a paintbrush, I go in and I start clearing some of the dirt around the one corner, and it was like something out of a horror movie. I found three of the crickets in there beheaded and buried. She had eaten the heads off and then buried all of them in the same corner under dirt. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen a spider do. And I remember calling Billy and go, you got to see this. Firstly, I was concerned because she wasn't eating. It was weird. She was like eating a head and then burying them. So it was like, was there something wrong with her stomach? A lot of times when they molt, they have problems with their sucking stomach. They can't eat a lot of food. They can starve that way. So I was worried about that. And then out of nowhere, she started eating again and eating fine. So it was this little psychotic serial killer period she went through, which was just beheading crickets and burying them in the corner, which, being a horror movie fan, totally endeared her to me. But it did cause me a scare. She was one of the slower growing of the Nandu that I've kept. And part of that was due to when I first got her. It was when the tarantula room would dip down to the mid-60s or so in the wintertime. Not for long. Most of the time, it was right around 68, 70, 72, depending on how much the heat was running. But it could dip down for a couple days into the 60s. So that probably, again, the old heat versus metabolism, probably kept her metabolism down a little bit so she wasn't eating as well. And looking back on it, it's a good possibility that some of those times that she was beheading them, it might have been during the cooler times. I wish I had taken that information down because it would have been neat to know. But after her little serial killer phase, she actually did quite well, started putting on some more size. And again, with these guys, I do keep them. I've read stuff where people keep them dry. As a sling and juvenile, I always made sure they had deep substrate, kept the bottom layers moist, and allowed them to burrow. And mine still continues, even as an adult, still continues to do a bit of burrowing. So I would advise that when keeping them, give them that room to dig, even when you start rehousing them into bigger enclosures. Ultimately, as an adult, she's about 5.5, probably close to 6 inches now. So young adult, I put her into a 5-gallon acrylic Lorax enclosure. So it's kind of long. It's about 16 inches long, 17 inches long. I'm turning away from the microphone because I'm trying to look at it. It's a decent size, and it seems to be a decent size for her. I used BioDude substrate. I gave her about 4 inches of moist substrate to start, cork bark hide, gave her a little starter burrow. While she buried herself, dug right into that starter burrow area, dug that whole area out. She has herself a nice deep little burrow. And this is as an adult. So this is one that the species that I've noticed and I've said before, if they're going to dig, if they want to dig, I'm going to give them the opportunity to dig. I gave her the opportunity and she took it. Last time she molted, she kind of webbed up the whole front of the burrow, filled it with some substrate and molted underground. So she still seems to appreciate having that deep substrate and having the ability to be able to burrow and hide. As an adult, she's grown to be quite skittish. She's crazy. I mean, you open that container, she bolts around the enclosure and inevitably ends up in her hide, but sometimes will shoot out of the hide for no reason whatsoever. This is one that is a shame. Somebody asked me on a YouTube video. I told him years ago I was going to do a husbandry video on him, and what happened was Billy and I set up two cameras. It was one of the ones we were doing two cameras on. So I had the overhead camera and I had, you know, Billy obviously on the handheld, so you can go around, get the close shots and see what I'm doing. And when we shot it, the camera Billy was using for some reason shut down in the middle of it. So we only caught like the first part of the video and it didn't record the rest. No idea what happened. It hasn't done that since, knock on wood, thank gosh. And so I'm like, all right, well, at least we have the overhead camera for some of it. The overhead camera had gotten knocked out of the way, so the view was like, you couldn't see anything that was going on. It was terrible. I lost both. I had two cameras on this one, lost it, so I didn't have any footage, which stunk because we had done the whole, we had waited to do this and put her into the nice enclosure and show the setup and had nothing to show for it. But right now I'm looking at her. She's poking out of her hide. If I were to go over there, she would duck right back into it. Very, very, very skittish. And I've talked to other people that are skittish as well. Again, I've heard some people say the hairs are horrific. Somebody else I talked to said they're not as bad as the other Nandu species, but I always caution people, it depends on your own genetic makeup, how you react to some of these. Some people react differently to different species. So for example, I talked to somebody that said they were haired by their LP. It didn't bother them all that much. I got haired by my LP and it was one of the nastier ones I've received, one of the nastier hairings. Not that I've received all that many of them, but this one, it was quite a few. This one, I got one in my eye. It was on my hands. My hands were all bleeding because I was scratching them. It was pretty bad. So remember that just because some people don't have an issue with it doesn't mean that you will be as immune to it as they are. Now, as far as being a beginner species, I always kind of caution people on this one. I think somebody that's got some experience, comfortable around spiders, knows their rehousings, could do fine with them. But I have, you know, mine is quite skittish. I have spoken to others that theirs are quite, you know, they're crazy little spiders, which is great if you like a spider with personality, which is not so great if you're somebody that was arachnophobic, is just getting into the hobby, don't know how to do your rehousings, and now you have a spider on your hands that you're afraid of. So I would caution people, if you still have that fear of it, you're still a little wary when you do a rehousing, you might want to, you know, wait a little while to get one of these. However, for folks who are feeling comfortable around them, they are awesome spiders. They are kind of a hobby staple one. I was aware of them very early on in the hobby. It seemed like everybody always had some in stock, and I think they're very similar in appearance, or somewhat similar in appearance, to the Acanthoscuria geniculata, so the two of them kind of get picked up together. But overall, just awesome spiders. Very, again, love the looks of them. One of the ones that doesn't have to have blues or greens or oranges to look really cool. And relatively easy to raise, relatively fast growing. You get a good beefy spider. Mine isn't the best showcase spider, only because I wish she was more out in the open, but I did give her that ability to burrow. She took it and she can have it. I do catch her out every once in a while. Again, yesterday she was out and about. So when I do catch her out, it's worth it. She's not as secretive as, say, a true fossorial species, but she's not out all that often. The best time to catch her is like first thing in the morning. I come up, she'll be out, you know, looking around. I caught her the other day getting a drink. So you will see them. They are cool. Definitely awesome spiders to pick up. And I think that's why they've endured so long in the hobby and why people still scramble to pick them up when they're available. So on to the third and last one on the list. We have Nandu colorata villosus. I picked this one up as a sling in August 2018. It was at Dinky Reptiles, and back in the day, they had somebody that was really interested. I haven't been there in a while, unfortunately. It'd be cool to go back at some point, but they did have somebody there that knew tarantulas, that knew of my channel, so she knew what she was doing, and they were picking up some really unique species. I think she was kind of picking up some cool stuff, and I found one there for a really decent price, so I'm like, what? Why not? So at the time, it was in a tiny little dram vial, again, the one that's about 1 inch in diameter, maybe 2 inches or 1.25 inches deep or so. It was a teeny tiny little thing. We were actually having trouble finding if it was in there at one point. I went to buy it and I'm like, all right, I have to see signs that this thing's alive before I pick it up. And it was. So we picked it up. And again, I was immediately struck by how quickly it grew, at least early on. It slowed up a little later, but early on, I think I was feeding them mealworm sections. If I'm not mistaken, I had produced some slings at that point and was doing the cut-up mealworms. So they got those. She got those. And it was a great eater. It was coming up, grabbing the mealworm pieces. I'd find the mealworm pieces gone. It was filling up. Again, it was one of those ones that it would eat a couple times and then go right into pre-molt, put on some decent amount of size. So finally, it was one of those deals where I went to take it out to feed it one day and I hadn't seen it in a while. Popped open the top of the dram vial and it was perched right on top. And it was obviously much too big for the enclosure. So what we did was moved it into one of those M design acrylic boxes I was talking about earlier. I like to use them for the larger slings. Again, around 6.5 inches by 5.5 inches by 4 inches or so. I can't find the size I used anymore. Everything I find enclosure size that I like and want to keep using, they stop making it. But anyway, I bought a bunch of them and I put it into one of these for a little while. Well, it outgrew that one very quickly too. At the point I put it in there, it was probably about 2 inches or so. It molted a couple times. It was too big for that one. So now it is currently in one of the medium-sized Exoterra breeding boxes, the ones with the clear bases and the black tops, vented tops with a little, it's got a little doorway, a little clear doorway, nice enclosures. I've been kind of steering away from them now. I got some things in them, but I'm moving away from them because for some of my species, they don't hold enough dirt for my taste. But I use those for quite some time successfully. They do work. It's just I tend to constantly look for new and better things or things I like more. So anyway, it's in one now. It'll be getting rehoused soon into something probably around 5 gallons or so because it's hit that 4-inch mark and I just checked on it. As a matter of fact, like I stopped recording for a second to go over and double check to make sure it wasn't an ExoTerra breeding box, and I checked in on it and its abdomen is quite plump. It's dark, so I'm thinking a molt's coming soon. Hopefully I'll be able to sex it then. I've not been able to get a hold of a molt. I'm hoping it's a lady, obviously, but anyway, it'll be moved to a much larger enclosure, and I should mention it does continue to burrow. When I moved it from the dram vial to the M-Design container, it did burrow, and one of the reasons I ended up rehousing it was because it couldn't burrow enough. It was like having a hard time keeping its burrow because it was getting larger, so we moved it over to the ExoTerra, which it did find a way to. I put a bigger piece of cork bark in, kind of built a nice little area for it to burrow in, and it has used that burrow. I rarely see it out. It's always in its burrow. Every once in a while, if I can entice it out with a cricket, when I feed it, it'll come out and eat crickets. And I did get some good video footage of it the last time I fed it, but it is a little more secretive. So we'll see if that continues once I give it a new enclosure, which will be, you know, its adult enclosure or young adult enclosure. It'll probably have 4 or 5 inches at least of substrate in it for it to dig into, and we'll see if it continues the burrowing. I also, like the other Nandu species, kept it moist when it was a sling, kept it moist when it's a juvenile. Once it hit, you know, the larger stage now, it's like 4.5 inches starting to look like a young adult. I moisten down the substrate. It always has a water dish. I let the substrate dry out a little bit, and then I moisten it down again. It seems to work very well for it. But when I give it the adult enclosure, once I put the substrate in, I'll keep the bottom layers moist. I'll put the drier stuff on top and we'll give it a starter burrow. We'll see if it digs down to the moist stuff. Because generally speaking, if you set up an enclosure with moist substrate in the bottom and they dig down to get the moisture, it means they like it. They prefer it. They're searching for it. So then you want to continue to keep it moist. So we will see how that one does. It's been a fantastic eater. Unfortunately, again, with the exception of that one time I caught it, I basically had a cricket by the leg and kind of got it to come out and it ate a few crickets right out in the open. But it's been tough seeing it, but they've been great eaters, growing rather quickly. In between, I'd say so far the Trapepii seem to be growing the fastest. The Chromatis was the slowest growing of the three, but we have to keep take into account that I kept them at lower temperatures earlier on, and the Colorado Velosis is kind of in between. But awesome spiders, really cool looking. Again, they have that fluffy appearance that I absolutely adore. There's just something about a really fluffy spider makes it look cute and cuddly. I don't think that if I tried to hug it, it would reciprocate in a way that I would appreciate, but again, we joke about them, we see them out, and it's like, oh, it's so fuzzy, but, you know, look but don't touch. And as far as beginners slash, you know, intermediate, whatever, it's same thing as the rest of them. It seems to be one that, you know, for somebody that it's in the hobby, that's kind of picking things up quickly, feels comfortable with them, they probably do fine with it. Somebody, you know, a true beginner that has no experience and might have that fear of tarantulas may want to avoid these guys for a little while. I'm trying to think if I left anything out. I mean, generally just awesome looking spiders, great eaters, grow well, they get good maximum size, so you got a beefy spider on your hands. You know, you can only say good things about them. Just really cool species. And ones, again, that I think would be good intermediate species for a lot of folks that are, you know, kind of gravitating towards, you know, more defensive or trickier spiders to keep. Again, some people, I never want to get into the whole beginner species debate. If I say something's a beginner species, somebody will come on and go, no, it's not. I'm scared of it and they're nasty. And then if I say that it's not a beginner species, somebody will come on and go, any species can be a beginner species if you're well informed. It's a gray area, but I do think there are people that when I think of like the true green beginner that has no experiences with tarantulas, these guys should probably be dealt with or kept later on after they've got some experience. I always say my big thing is if you can do your rehousings, you have a good, safe way to rehouse where you feel comfortable with it, where you're not terrified of the spider, you're probably going to be in good shape. That's a good way to kind of measure where you're at. So Nandu or Nandu or whatever you want to call it, the Trapepii, the Chromatis, the Colorado Velosis, definitely if you find them out there, especially it looks like the Trapepii are starting to pick up some popularity. Chromatis have been around for a while. They've always been pretty popular. But Colorado Velosis, you don't see them offered all that much. Those are ones that we really kind of need to establish in the hobby. So if you see them out there, I definitely encourage you to pick them up. You won't be disappointed. They're awesome spiders. And hopefully, you know, again, it seems to be my thing I say later, hopefully more folks will start breeding them so we'll get more of them out there. Because I do think they're ones that just people just don't know they exist. A lot of the spiders I try to highlight or tarantulas I try to highlight in my podcasts or videos are ones that I just worry a lot of people don't even know they're out there because there can be so many. What are we up to? I think 1,000 different species of tarantula have been identified. That's a lot of spiders. So it can be some get unfortunately lost in the shuffle. I find it part of my job to kind of bring those ones that people might be overlooking out to the forefront, kind of spotlight them so folks can look at them and make an informed decision and maybe pick some up. Now, hopefully some point in the future, I can do a video. It'd be nice to do a kind of a little genus review of these guys using these three. I just got to get some good footage of my Enchromatus, who does not want to be out in front of the camera very long. I do got some stuff, but to put together what I want to put together, I need a certain amount of footage. So we'll see how that goes, but that's definitely in the future. Now, for the last topic, I did allude to this earlier when I was talking about slings. It came up a couple times. It comes up every once in a while. And the last discussion, it was an individual who had been in the hobby back, I believe the 90s, been in the hobby basically a long time, had left and come back into it and was kind of relearning how much has changed. And having bought my first spiders back in the 90s when the hobby was still in its infancy. I mean, it had been around for a while. People have been collecting tarantulas since the 70s, but I think we've seen a huge boom in the last 10 years. Like people, the amount of species, the amount of, you know, between importing from Europe and breeding and everything, we're getting a lot more available. I know the 90s, I used to go to these shows and you'd walk around, you'd go to the reptile shows, and the folks that were selling tarantulas always had adult or young adult tarantulas. And nowadays you go, the majority of the folks have slings. So he brought up the idea that he's like, I'm trying to get a hold of some sexed females. Why can't I find these? It's weird that you can't find them out there. And why can't people sell, you know, sex slings? And it kind of turned into just a little commentary of how the hobby has changed since then. And it has. And I think the biggest difference, which I've already alluded to, is back in the day, when you were out shopping for spiders, you bought adults. Why were you getting adults? Because people were importing wild caught specimens. The majority of the ones available were wild caught. Breeding wasn't going on to the extent that it is nowadays, at least in the United States. I can't speak to Europe. Perhaps it was, you know, you guys have always been ahead of the curve over there. Germans have been breeding for years. But over in the United States, if you saw things for sale, it was generally older specimens. There weren't many slings available. And that wasn't necessarily a good thing. The reason why you were able to find females is because people were pulling females out of the wild, which we don't want. So that's the big change there. It's a very simple question to answer. Why aren't there as many out there? Because we're not, a lot of people are putting regulations down now. I think of Chile, where we used to get the G. porteri, G. rosea, and everybody's favorite, Homeoma chilensis. When I started getting serious in the hobby, Homeoma chilensis females were a dime a dozen. Everybody had them in. You go in, oh, Homeoma chilensis female, the adult Homeoma chilensis female, they're everywhere. It was because they were collecting them from the wild. That was not a good thing. Think of how many females were pulled from the wild that should be used to repropagate the species in its natural habitat. That's a terrible thing. So what happened is Chile closed its borders off from the exportation of its wildlife, and now we have a situation where we have to wait for people to breed them. So the G. rosea that for 20 years, maybe even 30 years, was the one that every pet store had. You could find them everywhere. They were a dime a dozen. People were selling adults for $10. I think I picked mine up for $20 when I got it. Now all of a sudden they're up in price because we have to rely on our own captive breeding measures, and we were having trouble breeding them. You don't see as many out there, so now they command a decent amount of money. We used to be able to get a sling for free. Slings were like the lowest level freebie. You spend $10, we'll give you a G. porteri or G. rosea sling. Now they're costing $40-$50. I've seen them even higher. So that's been the big change since the 90s to now, which is a good change because we should be, you know, I've gone through this many times and over my own guilt of the fact that I know as much as I like to think that someday I may have some of the only spiders in the world they may be only exist in a collection. We're contributing to that. As much as we want to go, well, we're keeping them alive. Yes, they will probably, if we didn't intervene and we didn't take some out of the wild, they would probably eventually die out there anyway due to habitat loss, due to, you know, man encroaching on their natural territory. But we're contributing to it. We're speeding up. So I always wrestle with that. So it's a good thing that we don't have a lot of females for sale. That question's an easy one to answer. That's why nowadays you don't go. You used to be able to hop onto an online vendor and usually they'd have several adult females. Now, generally speaking, if they have sex females, it was ones they were going to use for breeding projects that they're getting rid of because they already have some. It's ones that maybe they bought, you know, some of the ones we import, they can sometimes get some sex ones. They'll pick some up just to kind of spice up what they're selling. Again, they'd go very quickly though. There are not a lot of them out there. It's not like before where you could go in and buy all these things. I think of C. lividus, and those still pop up in pet stores. Our T. sturmi. A lot of Team Sturmies that were captive. You buy, you know, sub-adult, 5-inch, 6-inch sub-adults, usually end up being male, but you could buy them easily. They're inexpensive. You don't see that as much anymore, and that's a good thing. Now, the other question that I get, people that get frustrated all the time, and they come to me, and I remember asking this back when I first started buying slings. A vendor has slings for sale. Somebody goes to buy the sling and says, do me a favor, get me a female. It doesn't work that way. And just to explain how this works, vendors have hundreds, if not thousands, of slings at any given time. To sex a sling, especially a very small one, you have to get an intact molt, you have to throw it on a microscope, you have to get in there and try to get a good picture of it to make sure it has a spermatheca. Some species don't show it till later on. It can be difficult to get the intact molt. It can be very time-consuming to go in there. They don't have time for that. They'd rather sell it for a lower price point as an unsexed sling and have people buy them, and you just kind of roll the dice and hope that you get a female. That's why a lot of us, when we buy slings, we'll buy three. They're not going to, unfortunately, I can, for the 99% of the time, they're not going to go, all right, hold on, let me spend the next several weeks to try to get a molt so I can sex it and sell you this sling that I'm selling you for $35 for the same $35 and find you a female. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't make any sense. It's too time consuming. It's not how the industry works. So I've had people over the years come to me upset because, yeah, I went to the place you recommended and they wouldn't sex the sling for me. So I told them, no way. Well, that's not how it works, because that's, if you're buying a sexed spider, you can bet your butt you're going to end up paying a lot more for it too. So honestly, if they were to go out and spend all that time, get you a sexed female, say you're buying a sling for $45, that just went up to $100, $150, $200, depending on the species. Females command a lot of money because it takes a long time and money in some instances to raise them up. If you're a dealer, generally, if you're keeping something around, it's for breeding stock, but that takes time. You've got to go in and feed all these animals. That takes a lot of time. You've got to sex them. That takes time. It's time that they don't want to spend. So know that when you're buying, and this is obviously folks who've been in the hobby for a while know this. I hope they all know this. When you're buying unsexed slings. They're not going to go in there and sex them for you. That's not how it works. But for people that are new to the hobby, this is just a heads up. An unsexed sling is just that, an unsexed sling. If you see slings for sale, unsexed slings, don't bother asking. I mean, I guess one regard I could see that it doesn't hurt to ask, hey, do you happen to have any females? Because sometimes you never know where they might have something. Go, you know what? We do have one that we're going to hold on to, but we'll let it go. But expect to pay a lot more for it, and that's not an unsexed sling. Don't expect to order an unsexed sling, and don't put in the notes, please give me a female. It doesn't work that way. The other thing to keep into or to take into account is the fact that the majority of these slings sell out too. They don't hold on to a lot of stock. You don't want to be holding on to an incredible amount of stock. As it is, you're dealing in live animals. Those take space. The idea is to sell these guys as quickly as possible. And a lot of the species that you get out there, and I'm thinking of like GBB seems to be the C. cyanopubescens, seems to be an incredibly popular one that all the folks want a sex sling of. I've had so many people, you know, anybody that has a sex one, do we have the sex juvenile, whatever. The problem is they sell out so quickly that they're not going to hold on to any to sex for later on. Because the other question you get is, can you just let me know when you have, you know, when they've grown into juveniles and you can sex them, I'll buy a female. Probably not, because what's going to happen is they're going to sell out before they even get to that age. These, some of the species sell out so quickly. Another one would be the C. versicolor. That eluded me for a second there. Caribbean versicolor is another one. They sell out. They've been good sellers since I started buying slings. Like, they sell out quickly. So they're not going to, if you've got a sale right then and there, if you've purchased all these slings and you're a vendor and you're trying to sell them and you've got a sale right then and there, you're not going to go, no, you know what? We're going to stop selling these. We're going to stop getting money in our pocket, and we're going to hold on to a bunch of them, care for them, possibly pay people to come in and care for them for several, you know, several more months so that we can get them sexed and sell them as sexed females. It doesn't work that way. The other thing is, obviously, part of the, you know, the gamble of it is that you may get a male. And if they wait that long, males can be trickier to move. Nobody's going out there going, hey, young adult, the sexed male. It's not something that most people want, unfortunately. So it doesn't behoove them to have these guys, to hold on to them so that they can sex them and sell them for a little bit more money that they would probably have already spent just by maintaining and keeping them for that amount of time it took to sex them. Hopefully that makes sense. So again, when every once in a while I get people really frustrated because I can't find a sex. Why can't they just do this for me? Because it doesn't work that you're running a business and it just doesn't make logical sense. The best place, if you're looking for sex ones, go on to Arachnobot. Arachnoboards. That's a great spot. Arachnoboards, great place, and they do have the classifieds. They have the section there. You can go on and find people that are selling or looking to buy, and a lot of times you find folks that might have held on to them, and they're changing, hey, I got this GBB. I got another one. It's a female. Who wants this one? You'll find some good sex ones there. That would be the place to go. The other one is Fauna Classifieds, I believe it is. They also will sometimes have some, although lately it's been a lot of just one place will post up 30 flipping ads for, different spiders, and it's all one place. But they do, if you hunt, you can find some good stuff there. But that would be two places I would go to. Obviously, watch vendors, if they have something, if they imported something, and it's a sexed female, and some of them do. It's not, I don't want people coming back going, Tom said they never have sex ones. They do, but usually they import them. A lot of times they're up for pre-order, and they sell out very quickly. So you need to kind of keep your eye on the pages. I used to, back in the day, when I was hunting for certain species, I would constantly check in. I had like four or five vendors that I would constantly check in to see what they had in stock. I'd get all the emails. It would tell you when they had pre-orders come in. And sometimes you could pre-order stuff before it came in. And if there was something I wanted, I would pre-order to make sure I got it. And every once in a while, you'd see an adult or something. But for the most part, you're going to see slings, some sex adults. You got to grab them quickly. Or if it's just, if you're looking for them, definitely go onto Arachnoboards or Fauna Classifieds, try to find some there. But don't get upset when they're selling unsexed slings and they tell you, no, we're not going to sex it. No, you will not be getting a female. That was the other one. I had somebody, this was this summer, somebody emailed me really upset because of a recommendation I made, because they tried to order a sexed sea cyanidial pubescens and they told them they couldn't do it. And they're like, well, I don't understand. You have ones there, sex them out. And I tried to tactfully explain why this isn't going to happen, why they don't do this. And it fell on deaf ears, unfortunately. So hopefully I can use this section of the podcast the next time it pops up to help people out. Hopefully those of you, I know I've been getting a lot of people contacting me lately that are just getting into the hobby, that are finding the podcast and listening to the podcast. Hopefully this message gets you and you realize they're not trying to slight you. This is not bad business. I'm sorry. I know somebody will come out and go, well, blah, blah, went and they found a female for me. Awesome. I'm sure a lot of, I'm sure there's some out there that every once in a while they'll have something available. It's just not common. My other favorite is the one with the GBB. I just remembered this. At the end of the argument, she went, well, I found them at Backwater Reptiles and I'm going to pick them up there. Oh boy, good luck. That's the type of place that unfortunately a lot of people end. I think that's where they probably get a decent amount of sales for people looking for sex ones. The legitimate dealers say, unfortunately, we don't have any. Backwater's like, oh yeah, we can get it. And you're lucky if you get the right species. You're lucky if you get the right animal. You're lucky if it's not dead when it arrives. I've heard such horror stories. So please, another, call out, if you're into the hobby, avoid Backwater Reptiles, because that's, I think, they pick up, I'm guessing, a lot of the people. I was there. I get it, because I remember when I was looking for a female for something and I went over to Backwater Reptiles. I'm like, oh, they have females of just about everything, supposedly. Luckily, I did my homework and found out they're abhorrent. They're horrible. So avoid them. That's not where to go. Find a legitimate person on Arachnoboards. Find a legitimate dealer that might be getting some stock in, might just have some sex females. Find, just make sure you do your homework before you purchase, because if it looks like it's too good to be true, if nobody has sex females in and someplace suddenly has a bunch of them and it's called Backwater Reptiles, trust me, it's not going to end well. So there's my spiel on that, my public service announcement about buying slings and unsexed slings. Hopefully that helps some people out. Hopefully some of the dealers helps them out, because I know it can be frustrating sometimes when people get upset at them, because it's just part of the business model. It's how things are done. So anyway, that should do it for this one. As always, you can find me on thomasbigspiders.com. You can find me on Tom's Big Spiders on YouTube. Everybody stay safe, and we'll catch you all next time.